सहनावतु सहनावतु सहवीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शांति शांति शांति।
Just like your body, if it's hurt or wounded, does everything it possibly can to repair itself naturally. You don't have to tell it to please repair. It will do that. And we try to create an environment that can allow it to do that, to repair itself. In fact, in Ayurveda, which is so ancient, so amazing, I would say one of the prime ingredients to healing in Ayurveda, if you've ever gone to do that, is rest. They want you to have complete rest. No TV, no computer. They don't even want you to read. Of course, we don't do all that. We read. But that's what they want, just complete rest. To give the body the chance to heal. And then also providing, you know, the right type of food, good food, and then massage and oils and all of this, to let the body create a perfect environment for the body just to do its work, you know. And I think that it's not only that natural to the body, it's natural to the psyche also. If we know how to provide the right atmosphere to allow it to do that, to give it that kind of trust and let it do what it needs to do to work through some of these traumas and hurts and things that have been too much for the conscious mind to handle, that's also reparative. That also allows us to continue. Even as little children, it allows us to continue if something's too much, but if the experience is too much, your psyche has all kinds of defense systems to protect you, right? That will just click in automatically, just take that experience away. Sometimes a little child, you can see something is happening, something that's too much for them, and their mind just kind of goes, just takes it away and stores it for a later date, you know. But that later date is important, you know. We have to understand that there's a later date when we actually can come in and do something when we're older to take care of these things. But then we kind of have to know that the psyche is ready, willing, and able, you know, to handle and release you from these things that are just being held inside until a later date when you can handle it. Right? Held inside in a later date means held inside exactly as you felt when that little trauma occurred. And so until we're able to go in and take care of it, it just keeps being triggered. It'll keep recurring, even if you're 80 years old. Little three-year-old trauma will keep recurring. It just stays completely fresh. All is well. You know, this is what happened. Same thing for 60 years, 70 years, 80 years, until we die, actually. So we need to understand these things in some sort of depth. In some sort of depth. So it's not just the psyche working on its own, but we're providing what it needs in order to heal itself. And I actually feel like in older times, 200, 300, 400 years ago, and then way, way back, there were certain ways of being with the mind that was just absolutely taken for granted. But really, in the last 100 or 150 years, really since this, really the scientific revolution, you know, and materialism, secularism, all these things came in, we developed another way of being with our mind, which was just totally externalization of everything. So there was no really living relationship with the psyche. And when there's no living relationship with your psyche, then it just is bottled up inside. It has no way to come out except through projection. Because we ourselves have no, we don't even know. Until we know, we don't know that there's supposed to be, you know, an ongoing relationship. Both externally and internally, there's actually an internal relationship with our psyche that's supposed to be alive and well. So we have to learn that. We've done some work with inner child work and these kind of things, which is actually really important. But we just have to kind of go on, have a more deeper understanding, and have it incorporate more and more into our life. And I know many of you, we've done this. There's a few more things to learn. There's more depth to have. But you have to know it yourself. It has to be true to you, something how you live and how you are with your inner, with the psyche and with the unconscious, so that that's natural, like breathing, you know, just natural to you. And then as you more you understand it, you also will pass that on. And so we're kind of reinstating these lost values and these lost ways of being. You know, one example that we're going to work with today on in a different way than we have before is something that, you know, it's called Pratipaksha Bhavana. It's been in the tradition for thousands and thousands of years. It's been handed down for thousands of years. This is not a new thing, but we have to understand it a little differently. So, there's different applications of it, is what I'm saying. So Pratipaksha Bhavana means the emotional state. Your bhavana is the kind of the emotional state that you're in. It could be emotional state of deep peace, of deep shanti, well-being, or it could be hurt or agitation or depression. These are all emotional states or the affects that we carry. Right? So that's the bhavana. Pratipaksha. Paksha means a wing. Prati is the other wing, the opposite wing. So Pratipaksha is bringing in the other side, the other way it could be. So this is a new way of languaging it. The other way something could be. So Pratipaksha Bhavana. Another way we could be in the situation. So we usually use this Pratipaksha Bhavana for how we can revision or a different way of responding in a current situation. Like, for instance, if you hate somebody, that's the bhavana that you have, or that this relationship brings up. You have this bhavana of extreme dislike or hatred or wanting that person to get out of your life or whatever it is. That's an extreme. So that's an extreme example, but we all have had those extreme examples. It's good to use an extreme. So, the bhavana would be, the Pratipaksha Bhavana would be either in this world where it's actually happening on this physical level, or internally. It, in some ways, the external can be more powerful, but really the external and the internal are not really different. It's not as though, why I say that, is that how you are responding to any given event is usually just pure, if there's an emotion involved, especially the negative spectrum, but even the positive spectrum, it's projection. It is a projection, you know. It's coming from inside of you. It doesn't have an external reality. Some examples of that that are, can be kind of shocking. If there's somebody who you think is just a rogue, just the worst. You know, how can anybody put up with this person? And then you find your best friend or your neighbor, or this person or that one. You have best friends with that person, and you see them talking together and having the best time and really enjoying being together and all of that, and you think, how on earth is that even possible? So the core of the problem, what I'm saying is the core of the emotion that we're having is in us. There are many, many different ways that one can respond to others. No matter what the situation is, there's many ways you can respond. Even if a person is very inimical to you or has done something bad to you, you don't have to respond in kind. You can also respond, if this person has some problems, how can I help? I think that's Swamiji's his primary bhavana is just how can I help? It's not, look at what you're doing to me. It's, what's the matter? How can I help you? And that's a good little phrase. But what I'm saying is that the most important thing to understand in this Pratipaksha Bhavana is whether it's an external, you're experiencing this deep affect externally or internally. It's all internal. And you're the one who has to change. Not the other person has to change for their own sake. We have to change for our own sake. You can say, but they did that to me. I used to feel that way. This is so unfair. They did this and they did that, and then I can't reciprocate in kind because then I really suffer. You ever notice that? You know, somebody's really mean to you or doing something, really doing the wrong thing, and so you reciprocate in kind, and then you feel horrible. You know. Because the fact of it, it's just how the universe works. This person did some adharma and they're suffering from it. And now you respond in kind and you're also doing some adharma. And so Bhagavan doesn't say, well, you can do the adharma because they did that adharma to you. And so you go ahead and do that adharma, everything, and make everything better. It makes nothing better. And so that's a good message. I had to get that message at some point. You realize, no, there's no shortcuts. There's no shortcuts. So now, this is how we've talked about the Pratipaksha Bhavana. It really has to do with reimagining my response to whatever is going on in the world. It is a reimagining because, as I said, the psyche is imaginal. It's affects and imagine, just like nama rupa. It's affect and image. Affect and image. And so we have to change the image to change the affect. We have to change the imaginal scene that's kind of held inside in order to change the affect. And so the way to do that in terms of what is happening now with the people or the situations that you have a deep affect, usually negative, we don't bother to change the happy ones. You know, those are fine. So it's the negative ones that are hurting us. So to change that negative affect that we have in a situation, we have to reimagine the situation. That's the easiest way to change the affect. And so what we do in Pratipaksha Bhavana, when it's in this kind of the current, your current life, seemingly current life, is reimagine either out here by acting differently. That's a reimagining of the scene, situation, or reimagining internally, you know, by doing something different. And the way I like to word that is, because of our value system, and because of, we know how we, because of our values, because we are studying, we're in Vedanta, or Mumukshus, or Jnanis, you have a value system of how you have a guru, you know how you would like to be. For me, Swamiji is kind of up there as my role model. So I know how I would like to be. I would like to be able to be like him, how he handles situations, you know. And so what you can do, And even if you don't have that type of thing, you know in yourself because you know how you would like to be treated. So you are capable of reimagining the situation. You know, sometimes we don't want to, but nevertheless, you are able to do it. You know? And so in the current situation, you can either reimagine how you would like to be in that situation. And as you visualize it, you reimagine it, you'll see that the affect changes. It can't not change. You can't reimagine something in a positive light and not have the affect change. And so that reimagining is a very powerful tool in terms of changing the negative relationships you may have with the world in whatever way they crop up. And so that becomes, just in terms of Pratibhaksha Bhavana, for now, it becomes more of a value to you to do that than to act out and to live with discord, you know. And you'll find that when the discord or that negative vritti, that negative emotion comes up, your mind will say something like, let's not go there. You didn't want to go there. Because the ananda that you're seeking is your own being. It's not out there anyway. It's not like this person is really the cause of your happiness or lack of it. They're not the cause. The cause is your own mental state. The ananda is your own being. The wholeness is your own being. It doesn't exist out here. There's no objectified ananda. Nobody says, there's the ananda. Let me go get that, you know. Or there's the hatred. Let me move away from that. You project the ananda, the fullness of happiness, onto the object, and then you run after it. You only experience internally the ananda or the negative, you know, rejection or whatever it is. Internally, you don't run after that feeling. That feeling is projected onto an object, which triggers it. So almost all of our emotional life is the big stuff, is really held inside in the unconscious because of childhood traumas of one way or another. It's all projected out. The little ones that are current, it's easy just to let that go. You have shama. Shama just lets that pass. You don't want to go into it. The ones that grab you in the shama, you know shama, shama dhamma uparatita tiksha, this shama, it means that the things and the experiences that pass through the mind, you can let them go. Because you don't want that. It's just you have thousands of vrittis every day, maybe many thousands, every day passing through. And you can decide which ones you want to engage with. That's shama. If it's something that's not in your best interest or the best interests of the world or of other beings, those can just let them go. Nobody, not even Swamiji, Pooja Swamiji, let alone myself or Swamiji, Lagi Sananda, nobody has just a pure stream of ananda vrittis passing through. Love, 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 love. Not true. We take in too much data, of all kinds of data. It's coming in all of the time. So Swamiji, Pooja Swamiji will say, my mind, it's all kinds of funny things. So what? Mm-hmm. You know, so what? What difference does it make? It's scenery. It doesn't make any difference. But then, especially as children, we've been traumatized by certain experiences and they're held inside. And those ones keep recurring and recurring and they seem so real. Not true. It's not true. They exist as memories in the unconscious, in the form of affect and image. And they keep being projected by triggers. Somebody could raise their eyebrow, Swamiji will always do, raise their eyebrow in the wrong way. There it comes. No reason. You don't even really know the person, their accent. The way they say that. Whatever it may be, it's silly. It's all silly. Silly once we know what to do with it. So this Pratibhaksha Bhavana externally we've worked with. Now we're going to use it a little differently. We do the Pratipaksha Bhavana on what has happened to us in the past when we were little, where we're getting right down to where it actually, where the problem actually is located because of childhood traumas, childhood hurts that tremendously affect our current life, tremendously affect. They stop our, they put a crimp onto our relationships, on our warmth, on our ability to be social. All of these kinds of things are very much crimped or held back because of deep hurts in our childhood. So I'm going to tell you my own little story, one little story I have of a biggie for me when I was very young, about 4, and how I had to deal with it, different types of things that we've used. I'm just going to do a little psychological analysis of these things. And then we're going to do a meditation where we work on our own. Because I think that every one of us has 3 or 4, maybe 2, 3, 4, when you're young, very young, things that happen to you that you've never forgotten. This one that I'm going to tell you, I've never forgotten it. Ever since it happened, I guess I was 4, maybe 5 at the oldest. 4 and a half, because my brother was just a little tiny baby. Never forgotten it. It's just seared into my memory in a very painful way. So a 4-year-old child, 3, 4, 5, holding, and it can even be earlier where you don't, a child doesn't have the words to even say what it is, but say you weren't picked up in your crib and you just were totally traumatized by not picked. That's all in there, you know, with all of its affect. So this is my little story. My father had gone to Korea for the war, so he was gone from us for a long time, so I hadn't seen him for about 2 years, and he used to write home and all this, and finally he was coming home, so I was so excited, and I totally, in my mind, totally idolized him, and I couldn't wait for him to come home. And so the day finally came, and I was about 4 and a half or 5, and I had a little baby brother. And so he came home on a ship, and we were there. We got all dressed up, you know. My mom was all dressed up, and my little baby brother was dressed up. And I had my best clothes on, just so, so excited. And when the ship came in, we were probably waiting for a couple of hours. The ship came in, and then we saw all these sailors, you know, lined up and trying to see my father. Where's my father, you know? So finally, as they were coming down, my mother spotted him, and we saw him. He was way in the distance, you know, with all of these other sailors. They're all coming. We saw him. We were watching. And here he's coming. I couldn't wait. And he was my hero. And I was, in my own mind, the most important thing in the world to him, and he was coming home to me. I didn't have those words, but that was what it was. He was coming home to me, you know. And I was his little beloved. Okay. So that was my total reality. And so I was waiting. He's getting closer and closer and closer. I was so excited. I was so excited. And as he came, he went this way to my mother and my little brother and gave them a big hug and was holding them and kissing my mother and patting my little brother. And I was left there all by myself, totally humiliated, so totally embarrassed. I mean, the flurry of emotions of a little child, the flurry of emotions of humiliation, of shame, of embarrassment, it was so intense. It was so intense that I was so embarrassed and felt so much shame. I think because I thought I was the loved one, you know, and now nothing happened. I mean, he didn't even see me at all. I'm sure that in a few minutes he did, but by then it was way too late, you know. And so this defense system came over me, and I just completely pretended like nothing had happened at all. And then it's sad, isn't it? So sad. It's sad for me too when I tell the story. I can't believe it. Anyway, so then I think my mother took my hand, and my father and mother, and I don't even, he probably acknowledged me at some point, but it was too late. It was too late. I was gone. And just like a little zombie, I walked along with them and walked home. And after that, I have no memory at all. That is what it seared into my psyche for forever. Okay. Now, when you have a situation, and so I have others too, but nothing like this. This is the biggie, the big one. And so when you're stuck with something like that, that shame and humiliation and is horrible, you just aren't willing to come out again. There's always this tremendous guard that is up, that keeps you at a distance from others. It just does. And you can fake it, but it's not very real. Yeah. So it has to be taken care of, you know. You seem okay, but you're not really, because of this terrible hurt that is there inside. So there are different ways of dealing with this. The one that we've worked on here since I've been coming to is that inner child work. And I'll tell you why that's important. So say there's this event that has happened, and then the parents are unaware of it, and so nobody comes in to save you. So it's just, you're just left with it inside, that's it. But we can do for ourselves what the parents, had they realized, should have done and would have done. Like if my father, I assume, if he would have realized what was going on, he would have turned to me right away and picked me up and said, you know, do everything he should have done. And then I would have come out and I would have been okay. And so that would have been reparative, right, at that time. With the inner child work, we're able to remember that situation. And then we go in ourselves as the adult you that remembers what happened to you when you were a little girl. And you go and you be with that scenario and with that hurt and that little one. And then you do that reparative work because you know what happened. And you can be with her and tell her how special she is and whatever, you know inside what she needs to hear and how you need to be. You need to give to her or to him what didn't happen, what should have happened and what didn't happen in terms of repairing the trauma. See what I mean? So this is the key in that inner child work. A lot of it is repairing the trauma of what happened just by being there and being with the child and letting that child cry and be worried and upset, and you just stay there and let all of that come out, you know, and you're there in a loving way to be with that and to hold that. That's part of inner child work. But there's another thing that we can also do. I'm not saying not to do this reparative work, because that also takes care of a lot of things when you do that, when you go inside and you be with that imagination. It's like you enter into that imagination and give the little one what she needed or what he needed. That's basically inner child work and letting that one tell you what happened and all of that. There's a lot of repairing that goes on there. But another thing you can do in addition to that, and in some cases only this, it just depends. We have all of these tools and you have to practice them and know which ones are really helpful to you. But this one is another very beautiful one where the other disciplines in psychology, we use this, and NLP uses something like this, neuro-linguistic programming. There's a different people that use different versions of this, but it's very, very wonderful, actually. What you can do is go back into where that scene, that the affect and the imagination are. The affect and imagination are always there together. So you go in and you can say something like to yourself, how did I want that to be? You know, how do I want that? How did I want that to be? What did I want to happen? And then you reimagine the whole thing. This is what did happen, but this is what I wanted to happen. And you reimagine it. And as you reimagine it, like if I reimagine it, you know, my father was coming and he's so happy to see me and he picks me up and holds me and looks at me and he's just beaming with love, you know, and then he holds my mother and kisses my little brother and we're all held together. And then it's time to go and he holds my hand or he picks me up and puts him on my, on his hip and carries me and my mom has my little brother. And we're so excited and so thrilled and we walk home. That's what I wanted. So even now when I say that, it's an amazing thing. So you reimagine it and let those affects go ahead. Enjoy the fact that Bhagawan gave us this gift. It's a gift. It's a way to redo. We can redo the situation. But we don't have to hold these affects that, and images that are frozen in time. This happened 50, 60 years ago, 65 years ago, and that's a long time. You know, to hold an affect like that. It's just a memory. And if, when the traumatic memories happen, there's some adrenaline that takes place because of the strength, that sears it into your psyche, that adrenaline. Sears it into your psyche so it just remains holding you and then it's easily triggered because it was so painful. But if you can, are willing to do this imagination, you know, let that affect change, you don't forget what happened. I could have told you exactly what happened according to my little child's memory of it, but that's the memory that stayed with me. I know what that memory is. But when you change internally the affect, the image and the affect, that is what you start holding inside. Even though the memory is there, that affect isn't there associated with it. The affect changes. And now if I tell you the story, what actually comes to my mind is my father's very loving, adoring face looking at me. That's what comes to mind. That's very different than the terrible experience of that complete, as though I didn't exist, you know. So it's not that you forget. And I was teaching this to one student said, she goes like this, yeah, but that's cheating. Yeah, I mean, you can see how you can say that. That's cheating, because that's not really what happened. You know, but it's not cheating. It's reparative. It's not cheating. It's not like you forget. You don't forget the things that happened, but how you hold it inside is transformed. You know. So, what to do in Kali Yuga when so many traumatic things happen to us? You know. Does that mean that we have to go through life having those very painful memories triggered or threatened to be triggered? The defense system is really quick. If that emotion is threatened to be triggered by the lifting of an eyebrow of a certain person, then there's a wall that goes up and a smile and warmth and all that, but it's taking place through a glass window. So we need to learn all of these things so that gives the psyche a chance to heal itself. And these are tools of the psyche. You know, we have so many, we're so good in a way, going backwards in some ways in science, going backwards to things that are not so positive for the body, but we're very knowledgeable and open to healing, using all kinds of tools to heal the body. But we don't have the confidence or the knowledge of these tools that we need to use to totally heal the psyche to whatever degree it can be healed. You know? Your body could be hurt so that you always have a limp, for instance, you know. But you do everything you can to make it the best it possibly can be. And these kind of tools that we have in the psyche, they do everything they can. Do everything you can to make it the best that it possibly can be. And then whatever scars are there are kind of, you can look at them as your gateway of compassion, not only for yourself but for other beings, you know. These are the areas that make you, that give you a lot of empathy. But we can do so much. So when we learn these things, whether inner child work or what I'm talking about right now, when we learn these things, what was I going to say? Oh, when you start working on one, say I just told you the big one that I was working on, the others will come knocking. The littler ones will come saying, can you do that for me too? They line up. Can we do that for me too? Can you do that for me too? Yeah, we'll do it for every one of you. Okay. So we're just going to take a few minutes now, just a few minutes, just to relax into what I'm talking about here. We're going to take a break, come back at 11:30, and we'll have a meditation. Okay? I'm just going to give us just a few minutes of silence, just to kind of absorb what we're talking about. Okay, well, it would be nice, I think, to spend some time by yourself, maybe take a walk, because we only have, come back at 11:30, it's 10:45 now, so we'll come back in 45 minutes, just spend some time with yourself, kind of look inside, see what's going on in there, what memories are coming up, you know, don't be afraid, just be with what's inside, and then think about it, think about what we've been talking about. And then we'll have a meditation that will last about probably 45 minutes, not more than that. That'll be long enough. Okay? So let's take that alone time for a while. And we'll come back here, meet back here at 11:30. Okay. Oh.